Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like your prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about our can-do list, because we have one, right? It's all the things that we are about to get done with our group. And so what we often do on this show is we're going to define what the can-do list is, within our context, right? It's not a personal context, really. It's the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a workshop, a seminar, something that has a group dynamic, a group of participants, and we need to get to a successful goal. We need to get to a successful outcome. So what is on our can-do list when we are the leader of such a thing? Where we are the third-party impartial, where we need to get the varied participants to come together with consensus to reach their successful outcome. So it's on our can-do list. And, of course, we don't have a can't-do list because we're optimists, right? And we are going to meet the successful outcome. We're going to get there. So what's on my can-do list? Oh, we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. You know what? I think that we have consensus, that we've got leadership can-dos. I'm going to call these leadership because they're things that we as leaders need to have on our list of priorities, really is what it really is, isn't it? It's a list of things, maybe even not written down, depending on how much experience we have, or you could write them down. You know, some people like to make notes and like to make notes ahead of time so that they stay focused and they kind of stay on track and don't forget anything. Yeah, it's kind of just a personal preference. I don't generally, but make notes about where I'm going because I go with the group and watch them and think about them as I'm doing it. And if I have an actual written can-do checklist, unless it's something unusual that I don't usually do and I don't want to forget, I've got it in my mind. It's not on a piece of paper. People are asking whether you should write this down. The answer is write it down if you need to. It's not a sin. And maybe not keep to a specific order, but watch the group and think about where we're headed, right? But it needs to be a little bit flexible, so maybe a notation that's not real long so you can glance down at it. Yeah, and it's true. Yes, people are saying that we've seen you write things down on the list, especially when we start. And this is absolutely true. Secretly, because a lot of you have actually seen me in person. Yes, hello to all of you. Secretly, the thing that I'm writing down is the names of the people. My memory for names is not good. And I see a lot of groups, a lot of participants. I do a lot of mediation. And sometimes it blends together the people's names. I'm not sure, you know, this is kind of rude, but, you know, people kind of look similar to each other, right? Right. Unless there's something really, really distinctive about someone. Oh my, and sometimes I don't see them in person all that much or even on Skype all that much, but Skype, you know, you had to dial in, so you know who you've got. But if it's a room full, even on Skype and like that, or conference call, I actually do write down the names. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I and people are asking if I, this is off topic, but it's a can-do list also, right? It's a can-do list to write something down that you need in front of you, right? And maybe the first thing on your can-do list is that we need to remember who everybody is. And yes, what I do is when we meet and I have, and everybody does the little introductions and how are we doing, and really sometimes for my benefit, but we go around the room and say, what have you done since the last time, and say who we are, and like that, if people refuse to wear name tags, I'm kind of fond of name tags, but I actually don't necessarily put a description about them because there's probably nothing that distinctive, but I make like a seating chart. I do it in the order of the circle or the table or whatever it is that we're sitting at. Yeah, I really do. I write down their names. Unless I see them awfully frequently. But even if I've seen them awfully frequently at a prior case, then I haven't seen them in a little while and they've hired me again. Yeah, we do the intro. We do the name. We do the name tag if possible. And like that, yes, I write down names. It's what I'm writing down. It's not my can-do list. The first thing on my can-do list is remember who everybody is so I can call them by name and also so I know who's speaking. So I have an idea when we email up and back which one you were. Yeah. Yeah. If you have a really good memory for names, you certainly don't need to do that, but that's what I do. The thing I have on the piece of paper is everybody's name in order of how they're sitting. Yeah, so I know who's who. Yeah. You know why? Yeah, it is why I'm so fond of name tags. You guys know that I really, really think name tags are a wonderful thing. It's because I'm somewhat name tag dependent, and I confess it. Yeah, it's just one of those things. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have leadership can-dos, and that's probably the first one, right? That you can write the list down, the can-dos, if you need to in notes. You write whatever you need in order to make your leadership ability smooth. Yeah, I know people who write down all set out, really, well, I wish they wouldn't read it, but just to give themselves the start, they write down their, like, introductory statement. Yeah, when you start any kind of a group or mediation or something, you make an introductory statement. You say who you are and whatever else you need to say. I don't usually do credentials because everybody knows that I have the credentials and I wouldn't be there if I didn't. But you say who you are, maybe why you're here, and you explain the process is what I do. Essentially speaking, I explain what's going to happen just procedurally. Yeah. People want to know what the introductory statement is. Who you are, why we're there, and the procedure, what's happening. And also, for example, if you are meeting in person in an office building or something, I like to say right up front the comfort things. Where the bathroom is, when we're going to have lunch, and if it's going to be brought in, if there's any kind of needs, I like to know them, right? Yeah, that kind of stuff. I like to do the comfort things, and I also say that we're going to explain about the civility rules, we're going to take turns, and that there are no unwelcomed questions. We want to hear them. Now, we might think about that with the civility rules later, but at least at the start, there are no unwelcome questions. There's nothing dumb that you can say. Yeah, especially, you know, people, we've done it 1,000 times. We've got it memorized, but the participants, well, okay, I have repeat business, but sometimes the participants, it's new to them. And they feel kind of like the first day of school, right? Kind of lost, but being business people and being in with maybe peers or maybe even someone who's a little, well, someone they want to impress, okay? Maybe a superior, for example, a supervisor or something. People don't want to seem green but they would like to know stuff about how this is going to go. Right? Right. So I just announce it to everybody as my opening statement to say, you know, this is how it's going to be. This is what we're going to do. This is how mediation works. I make a little general opening statement about the process because most people in the room would kind of like to know because they've never done it before. The people in the room who are very experienced, even if they've done it with me, they can sit through it 3 minutes of this is what we're going to do when the bathroom's over there. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not going to kill them. Besides that fact, they might not remember. So, anyway, so that's what I do. That's the first thing on your can-do list, of course, to make everybody feel comfortable, and in my case, to remember their names. Oops. But I get so interested in the dynamic that sometimes the names fall out. So you got to, yeah, if you've got a list of people that's been given to you who's in the room, you can write next to the names something about them. Quite frankly, if I've got a printed list that I've been given, right, easiest thing to do, because people are asking this too, we've gotten a little bit off topic, but this is really a can-do list also, because it helps you to be an effective leader. If I've got a list of people, especially if they're going to shift around and like that, I generally speaking put next to their name, although this won't do it permanently, but it'll jog your memory and there may be something about them later on, what they're wearing. Something distinctive that they're wearing, red shirt. You know what I mean? So that you know which one's which in the room. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very simple way to identify which one is which, especially if you've got a big group. Yeah, they're all wearing black suits. No, they've got something about them that's distinctive. Yeah, I've had to resort to jewelry if everybody's dressed real conservative. I can't say because I dress kind of formally too. Okay. So what is on, besides the figure out who everybody is and write it down if you need to. If not, you can probably memorize it. Yeah, people are giving me all kinds of little ways to remember names better. Thank you. That's very nice of you. I have tried the various ways, and I see so many people that it might help temporarily in the room, but it's easier for me to just jot down what they're wearing, right? Because then I won't be focused on trying to memorize that their name rhymes with Hank because their name is Frank. You know, that kind of stuff. I find that it doesn't help. It's what it really is. Whoops. Anyway. So what else leadership can do's do we have on our list? We have lots of people participate. Thank you so much. A lot of people, Christy and others, are saying that one of the leadership can-dos is to remember to lead by good example. Right? Yeah. Lead by good example. Lead with, yes, people are saying the civility rules right up. And, you know, we talk about the civility rules a lot on this show. And a lot of people return, thank you all for being here. And we've got some new people. Thank you for coming. Please do come again and become regulars. Yes, we have lots. The civility rules are just about the only rule the Recipe for Peace Now has. And they're very, very basic. And the civility rules say, don't be rude to anyone. That's it, at their basic. Don't be rude to anyone. Don't roll your eyes, don't cross your arms, don't shout at them, give everybody their turn. You will, as leader, judge your group, judge your participants, and see whether or not the civility rules need to be stated, need to be written. I mean, some groups, yeah, need to be actually enforced or gently enforced. That's a judgment call. But at the core, the civility rules say we're going to have a convivial atmosphere and no one will be rude to anyone else, and all opinions are welcome and thought about. But when we reach consensus, we go on. Yeah, that's the real basic civility rules. And yes, we have agreement. Christy and others are saying that the main thing is on our can-do list is that we as leader must be a good example of the civility rules. We must be masters of the three deep breaths, think before you speak. Yes. Because sometimes you've got a bully in the room. Yeah, and we've talked about that in prior shows. Archived Recipe for Peace Now .com. That's our website. All the prior shows are archived on it. But yes, sometimes you have more of a challenge with the civility rules than others. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, of course, you are a good example of civility. That's on your can-do list. And your can-do list may indeed encompass setting out the civility rules. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've actually, and we've talked about this, I actually favor having people take turns for a certain time period if it's necessary to enforce the civility rules. And I know that people use all kinds of different methods for this. I actually do something very, very basic, because everyone thinks if you're keeping time yourself, the leader, or somebody else is keeping time, everyone feels like they've been cheated and someone else got more turn than they did, right? It's just natural. It's human nature, especially if you have a fairly contentious group, which is why you're having to do this. I actually use a cooking timer, the kind that has the dial and you set it to however much time people have each. And it sits in the room. You can see it. You can see it counting down, and it goes ding. Yeah. Then everybody knows that they've had their fair share. And everybody can gauge how they're doing time-wise, right? Because they can see the darn thing. I'm greatly in favor of it. Over the years, I found that it is the most effective to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really have. Okay. Now, what else is on our can-do list? Mm-hmm. Eric and others are talking about remember to explain the process. Yeah, that you explain it to everybody so nobody's embarrassed. People are embarrassed to ask. It seems like they're gringos, like they're inexperienced. And people don't like to look inexperienced for the other people, for the leader. So I like to just announce things, just that I think everyone should know. So I'm sure everybody knows it. Mm-hmm. Geeta and others are saying that one of the can-do list is to announce that there's no stupid questions. Yeah. Yeah, we're getting some disagreement. Well, okay. My general premise is that there's no stupid questions until proven wrong. Because sometimes, and I think this goes to the civility rules. When we start out, there's no stupid questions, right? Because everybody's feeling out what it is that we're going to be doing, how it is that it's going to work, what opinions people have. No stupid questions. As the process goes forward, sometimes a participant, or maybe more than one, can't let go of something that is impractical, which is a nice way of putting it, right? Yeah. And you can't keep taking time with it, right? So maybe on your can-do list is the civility rules, but they might not be uncivil. At one of our timeouts, remember we have timeouts with the potluck recipes, with the food, right? And that the food is a tool so that we can talk to people privately and not in front of the whole group. That might become one of your can-dos to take the participant aside and explain that we need to go forward, that we understand that that's a good point, but that we really need to go forward. We need to really accomplish what we set out to do, right? Yeah, to go forward. That's the ticket to it. Yeah. So that's maybe one of our can-dos, is we take somebody aside and kind of explain to them, and then if they keep doing it, we might gently remind them that we've gone forward from that, even when we're in the group. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's on our can-do list, our leadership can-do? Mm-hmm. Ian and Gita and others are saying that one of the things that's on your can-do list is to expect surprises. Yeah, it's a good point. That it's not going to, you can have your list if you'd like. You can write it down in purple ink. But there will be surprises. And I've been doing this for more than 30 years. And there's still surprises because I'm doing it with people, right? And even though I've got a lot of experience, and even though I know I've seen a lot of stuff over the years, and things are similar, there's always some sort of a surprise in store, right? Yeah. There's always something different, something that you go, wow, didn't think of that. Yeah. There's always a surprise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you have to expect it calm and not get all rattled. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can expect surprises. That's a really good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a really good sentence that Brooklyn has said. She says, remember that prior experience isn't present fact. Remember that prior experience isn't present fact. And it's a good point. What's happened in the past, it advises us. It gives us experience. It makes it a foundation. But it's not present fact. We have to remember to think about what's in front of us. Think about what it is that we are dealing with now. Right? Yeah. And prior experience is not present fact. This is true. Yeah. You know, this is a good point, too, on our can-do list. And sometimes you have to remember this. Richard and others are saying to remember that on our can-do list, you need to remember that the leader, which is us, is also part of the team. Yeah. You might need to write the word team mentally or on a list. Yeah. To remember that you might be leader, and you probably are, but you're also a team member, right? And that means that you're going to also treat everyone with respect, and that although you're looked to for leadership, another team member may have more expertise in a certain area than you do. You're a team. There is no I in team. Ever hear that expression, right? Yeah. You can't get arrogant and say, well, no, I know best because I'm the leader. Well, maybe you don't. Maybe somebody else knows something that needs to be told. They're part of the team. Yeah. Rashawn is making an interesting point that when you are a part of the team, Rashad says you need to clarify why you're the leader. Because you might be a team member, but you're the leading team member. That's a good point. Clarify why you're the leader. So that everyone remembers how come they're following your lead. How come you've called on them to participate, to contribute. Mm-hmm. And you're the kind of focal point of the group as leader, right? Things go through you. So that organization can be had, really. There has to be somebody who leads because somebody has to keep track. Yeah? And even if you've got an assistant that's technically keeping track, keeping a spreadsheet or whatever it is, you're the person where all information flows through, right? And you as leader also make the decision about the process, about the progress of the process. Is it time to move on, to go forward? Is this the moment where we're going to go forward, to lead, to get to the next level? Is this our moment, is the question. Mm-hmm. And you got to decide what that answer is, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So go forward. Mm-hmm. Remember that the leader is also part of the team, but you need to clarify, as Rashad says, why you're the leader. Yeah, it might just be as simple as the fact that you're an experienced third-party impartial who has been hired to be the leader. I have that a lot. I've got a lot of experience. I'm an attorney. I know what I'm doing. And I'm keeping track, right? Keeping score, so to speak. Yeah. So it might be as simple as the boss has hired me. I mean, that's a good reason, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else is on the leadership can-do list? Gary says to bring your expertise. Yeah. You have to remember that you want to make the best outcome possible. And sometimes you have to think about your expertise. Sometimes I have to think about whether or not we need more expertise and we need to bring in an outsider, an expert, right? Yeah. And that's important, too, to be able to think about that and put it on your can-do list. We need to find somebody to help us with this. And since we're members of the team, we can ask the other team participants to think on it and to see if they have a suggestion. Or maybe we could just research it on the internet. Or maybe we need to make a phone call to someone that is connected with our issues, right? Yeah. Sometimes we need to go forward and seek expertise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's on the can-do list also. We can do that. We can go outside of our team, outside of our group, and look for help, essentially speaking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maria says about other, that we need to listen to other viewpoints, and that may be the experts, that may be the outsiders. Listen to other viewpoints might even be looking at groups on the other side of the issues. Right? And what they're saying and what they are doing and why they're on the other side. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we are not as polarized as we seem. Right? Sometimes we have the same values, the same viewpoint, and the successful outcome can be modified to accommodate everyone. What an idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting point that Peter is making. On the can-do list, we're listening to other viewpoints, right, and to experts and looking at our group. But you need, Peter says you need to listen to yourself as others do. Yeah. You need to listen to what you're doing, right? And kind of stand back and think about your good example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whether or not you're coming off as impatient, for example. Yeah. I have to guard against that. I try to remember never to be impatient and never to come off as arrogant, kind of a know-it-all, right? Because it alienates the other team members, for one thing, and things can be phrased in a way that is not, doesn't have that charming underlying implication that you think the other people are idiots, right? Yeah, because sometimes you have, always, as a good example, you need to watch your tone and your body language and to listen to yourself, right? And think about it, and the way really to listen to yourself is to watch the reactions of the other people, of the people you're speaking with, of the people you're dealing with, mm-hmm. towards you. and see what they think and how they are feeling, because you want to be inclusive and civil at all times, right? And also, as leader, if you've got a successful outcome that you've that the group has agreed upon, right, and we're heading towards it, it is your business to create consensus and bring everyone together and not really take a side. Do you understand what I'm saying? Not really insist that one side might be better than the other side, right? Yeah. It's important that you not take a side, that you not indicate favoritism, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very important. Very important to the group dynamic that you not... you not indicate that there's favoritism going on, right? Yeah, you remember not to take a side with the other people's report. And listen to yourself. It's a good point. Mm-hmm. Lamb says that you need to also acknowledge when you need help. That's looking for an expert, because sometimes you do. And it's not an embarrassment. It's only a bad thing if you refuse to look for help. That would be a bad thing. Yeah. Acknowledge that you need help. Acknowledge when you need an expert. Good point. Mm-hmm. Shay says is the main thing that's on the can-do list, and a lot of people are in agreement with this, is that you need to get the group to reach consensus and move forward. Right? That's your main can-do. Get the group to reach consensus step by step and move forward so that it can achieve the successful outcome. Okay. Now we've got our list. We've got our can-do list. What can we do to make it be? Mm-hmm. How can we complete it? How can we check things off? You know, we're a practical show, and we like to know what it is that we can do to make it so, to make these things happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've got our list, right? Carrie and others are saying that you should list the items in order of importance, right? Order of importance, so that you can start from the top and work your way down. Mm-hmm. If your list is relatively general, that will help, because you might not. It might be something like, good example is civility rules, which is on the top of your list, but doesn't really get checked off until we hit the successful outcome. Because it's always something you need to do, right? Yeah. Vaughn says the list is not always the same. It needs to change with the circumstances. Yeah, things get added and deleted in your mental list or in your written one, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to be flexible. You have to. The list is not like your grocery list, where if you need eggs, you need eggs. The list is flexible. And you might need eggs, but they might be out of the kind that you like the best. So you pick a different kind of eggs, right? Something that's equally good. It's just not exactly what was on the list to begin with. Yeah, you had large white eggs. They don't have any. Well, you need eggs, so you're going to buy the cage-free brown ones. Nothing wrong with them. Yeah. Yes, they're a little more expensive, but that's the flexibility that you need something, and we're going that's on the list, and we're going to be flexible about exactly how it gets checked off. Yeah, because circumstances change. Mm-hmm. Change with the circumstances. Mm-hmm. Brody says you need to stay focused on the successful outcome and that the list is only a tool. Good point. The list, the can-do list, is indeed a tool to kind of keep us on track. It's a focus, right? It's so we don't forget something. But it really is just, it keeps you to stay focused on the successful outcome. So in that sense, it's just a tool. And if it's private, it's truly just a reminder. Mm-hmm. It's like having notes. Carmen and Liz say that you should share the list with the group and solicit help and ideas. I think so. If it's the right group, you have to decide that. That you share the list with the group. You say what it is that we're going to accomplish, right? You share the list with the group, and then you decide if that is something that's occurred or not, right? Yeah. And you reach your successful outcome and solicit help. The list might be, yeah. You know, that's a good point. Frank and others are saying, never mind, share your list with the group. The group should have a can-do list so that they can stay on path, kind of a checklist of what we're going to do. You know, such a thing with a group where you have a group checklist is especially valuable if there's a timed sequence of events that we need to keep track of and not forget any of the steps, or we can't do it, we can't reach our successful outcome. This is true especially if you need to have some sort of filings with the government, for example, something that has a time limit, something that has a fee that must be in or PERS that must be in, yeah? Very important, you have signatures that you have to get, you want to put something on a ballot. There are checklists with a group that are really, really to keep us on path, because we need to know that we've got it covered a week in advance just in case we need something else, right? Yeah, and it's very important to keep dates that you need by a certain time, sometimes even by a presentation, right? Some sort of a deadline that is it's kind of third party, but it might be a deadline because you're making a presentation somewhere, right? And that's a deadline too. That's a presentation. It's something that's got a set timing to it is very important, right? Right, yeah. I'm sure the list with the group. A lot of people are advocating that you should have the group create the can-do list, and then others. It's a good point. And especially, people are saying that a can-do list that has set dates and stuff is really a timeline. Yeah, it really kind of is, isn't it? It's deadlines by which things must be done, right? Yeah. So it's kind of a timeline. Yeah. You have that if there's any kind of an event, too. You have deadlines that have to be done. The deposit has to be in. Orders need to be put in so that they have enough time to get there. And you have enough time to look at them and see if they're wrong. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, I've got a lot of times I have deadlines like with books to be ordered and things. Right? Right. So that's a can-do list that the group does. Sundeep says that a lot of other people say that the list doesn't get completed until you achieve the outcome, and then on to another. The list doesn't get completed until you achieve the outcome. That's really true. Some stuff stays on the list because it's just reminders to do. And when you achieve your successful outcome, you're such a good group and you've worked together so well, you might go on to another project, right? Another issue. Yeah. Yeah, there's actually big organizations that do that. They cure whatever it is that the organization was fighting to cure. A very fine thing. But now you've got an organization that's kind of in place, and they're a good team, but their primary focus is no longer. Yeah. But I have that with the March of Dimes in the United States. Big organization. And now they've gone on to infant birth defects and research and things like that. Because, what did March of Dimes do? Was it polio? Yeah, some sort of a thing that really isn't in the United States anymore. Yeah. So it's important. Yeah. So the list gets completed and go on to another task. Carmen says that if other items are deleted, others are added, if you're going to do a can-do list. As you go forward, yes, you find things out. You find things out that need to be taken off your can-do list because probably they've already been done. Mm-hmm. And then you need to add something else more specific, right? Yeah. Because as you go into the process, as you go further, as you get more experience, the specifics of getting to the successful outcome become more clear. And that's the idea of the thing. It gets more clear. You get to think about it better, and you go, well, gee, I think this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, some items are deleted, others are added. Yeah. You know, Hussein is making a good point, and it's really the base point of this whole thing, that you're going to have a list, that's fine, but the process of going forward is not completely predictable. It never is. Yeah. That's why one of the things on our list is to expect surprises, right? The process is never predictable, really. And so you go forward with an open mind, in a sense, an open list. That's why the list is fairly general, unless it's got deadlines on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patricia says, the list is a suggestion of what needs to be done. Yeah, it's flexible. It's a suggestion of what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, yeah, people think that it's really kind of group satisfying to click off items, right? That's done. And we're really big on showing progress because sometimes whatever the issues are, whatever we're striving for, it's taken a while, right? It is. It's taking a while. And it seems like we're not getting anywhere. We're still working on that. We're not getting anywhere. Right? But we are getting somewhere. It's just slow going. Yeah. I use the example, yeah, polio, but also like cancer research, right? Nobody's really cured practically anything. But they're getting closer. And people are moving into remission better. And they're living longer, right? It's got a whole, it's not really that we're not getting anywhere. It's just that the process takes time and thought and maybe money. Good point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have a checkoff list. That's done. To show that we've really gotten something done, that we are pushing forward, because it is human nature to forget how low down you started. And it seems like, it's been a while, and we're still talking about it. Well, possibly. But also, maybe it's been a while because we are progressing step by step. And that's important, too. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not that we're not, clicking things off of a list is a mighty fine thing to show us progress. And that's why a timeline is good, too. And yes, the list is kind of a timeline, isn't it? Yeah. Mahalia says that we successfully use our list of can-dos and reach inclusion by creating a strong group dynamic capable of agreement and progress. Yes, we're going to make a team. We're a strong group dynamic. We're going to reach agreement step by step, and we're going to make progress the same way, piece by piece, step by step. Right? Right. Yeah. Now, I have left a few minutes. I hope I've left enough because we had such a wonderful conversation. Thank you all for being here and for all of your participation. I've left about 15 minutes, well, less, I'm afraid, for the recipes because I know I promised them, and a lot of weeks we don't get to them. So we're going to do I'm going to make my little speech, yes, because it's so important. If you're going to have food, and you are, because food is a wonderful tool to get people together. I mean, we might be hungry too. But when you have a timeout, we have a break, it's nice to have some food together. It keeps everyone in the room. It gives you something to talk about that doesn't piss you off. It gives the leader a moment to kind of have a little private chat, maybe with somebody, especially about the civility rules, right? So that they're not embarrassed in front of everyone, which oftentimes has no upside to it, unless you get desperate and need to. And the food is delicious, of course. But it gives us a time to take 3 deep breaths and get to know each other better. Right? Right. So we're going to have some food. We need to take a survey. We need to ask if anybody's allergic to any kind of a food, doesn't eat it, or has a religious prohibition. All has to be accommodated, right? Survey is sent around about the information. That's why we have a leader. We put together the information, and then we tell everyone if anybody can't eat something. Also, I think that... you guys are helping me with this. It's kind of like, oh, I have a list. You need to have asked people also to list what is in the dish, what is in the food, so that I can run my, not just what it is, meatloaf, but so I can run my eye down the list and make sure that it's something I can eat. We don't want anybody to have a bad time, right? Right. And I think, as a leader, I like to bring something a little extra, because people have a kind of small amount idea about what they're bringing sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I hate to run out of food. It makes for a bad party. And I think we should at least have one safe recipe. Now, what's a safe recipe? Now, this is a global show, so your safe recipe is different than mine. Because a safe recipe has not too many ingredients. We've taken the survey. Nobody seems to be allergic or can't eat any of them. And they are ingredients that my people would have eaten before and be familiar with. Now, my safe recipe may not be your safe recipe. I consider an adventure recipe anything with curry, for example, because it's kind of unusual around here. So you have to judge whether this is a safe recipe. But we've taken our survey. We've asked for people to put down the list, right? And this is something that it seems like everyone can eat. And it doesn't have too many ingredients, and my people would be familiar with them. So this is the turkey raisin casserole. Oh, it's so delicious. Kind of sweet. I like it that way. Now, I'm going to tell you something because we're all friends, right? You can do this with leftover turkey. But I hate to say that because I don't want you to make anybody sick accidentally. I mean, turkey's perishable, right? Right. Now, I've done it with leftover turkey. Leftover turkey being cooked, right? You have a big turkey, got spares. What to do with them? Well, you've got enough to make a whole nother meal, a whole nother potluck, right, for a bunch of people. You can do this with turkey, with ham, and like that. We're going to give the recipe as though the turkey is raw, but you know, of course, that you need to cook the turkey one way or another. But if the turkey's already cooked, well, you ignore the dredging part. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. And you don't have to cook this as long because your protein is already cooked. And you put it into nice chunks. And yes, if you use ham or some sort of pork or something, that makes it an adventure recipe. Remember, people don't eat pork, so you have to know. Yeah, but it works very well with, well, anything that can be cubed. It doesn't work well with meat because it's too chewy, really. But ham, chicken, turkey, yeah, those are probably the three. Oh, if you must. People are going for tofu. Yes, but you know that I am unfamiliar with cooking with tofu, so you have to judge about browning it and putting it in so that it's yummy and delicious and still firm. Because I truly, it's a skill that I've not acquired. I'm not familiar with tofu. People bring tofu dishes all the time, and they are yummy. Uh-huh. Especially the kind that has the small cubes of tofu that I am going to refer to as, I don't know if it's fried or not, but it's browned on all sides and kind of a skin to it. It's kind of lovely, toasty. Yeah, that kind. Yeah, that's delicious. I don't even know how it's done, but it's just yummy. And then you put that in at the last minute so it doesn't get soggy. Ooh, yum, yum, yum. Yeah. So, yes, so I truly approve of tofu. I just don't know how to handle it properly. But, yes, people bring tofu dishes all the time, and the ones that have the yummy tofu that's gotten browned all around and is not kind of squishy. Ooh, delicious. Okay, now that we've discussed that. Yeah, and you can, yeah, it's got a lovely sauce. Let's listen to the recipe. You'll see it has a lovely sauce. And, yes, you can use it for many lovely, like, vegetarian little dumpling things that are delicious, but don't put them in until the last minute if they're already pre-cooked because they'll go soggy. Okay, so we're going to have, let's have half a cup of all-purpose flour, just regular flour. This is using raw turkey. Did I explain about cook thoroughly, make sure it's not too stale, cube it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's have about 4 pounds of turkey breasts cut into chunks, a couple tablespoons of oil, nice big sweet onion, which we're going to thinly slice. Let's have a red pepper, seeded, veined, cut into chunks. Let's do the same thing with a green pepper, seeded, veined, cut into chunks. Let's have a cup and a half of chicken stock. You might need a little bit more. You'll look. Mm-hmm. I like to add white raisins. You can use regular raisins. I'd like half a cup of white raisins. I think they look better, and they're somewhat sweeter. But if you can't get them, red's perfectly fine. 4 tomatoes, peeled, seeded, and chopped. You know darn well, those of you who have been with me for a while, that I'm going to use a can because it's just easier. But if you use actual tomatoes, it'll probably look better. But you chop them up anyhow. I'm going to use a can of tomatoes that I'm going to drain. You know how sometimes we use the juice to? No. We've got chicken stock in this. It'll make it too looky. Drain the whole thing. If you're classy, you can use a colander. I personally pull my hand over it. I drain it, and then I'm afraid that I put the tomatoes, after they've been drained out, onto a paper towel and blot them. Yeah. But drain the juice out. Mm-hmm. Let's have some cinnamon. It goes really nice with the raisins. Let's have a teaspoon of cinnamon, ground cinnamon. Mm-hmm. And that's really it. So it's good. We're going to preheat our oven to 325 because this is indeed a casserole. Mm-hmm. You know that flour? Let's spread it out on, all right, you can use a plate. Personally speaking, I use a piece of wax paper or a plastic bag just so I can just peek it up when it's done. Spread the flour. A little salt and pepper on it. And now we're going to take our turkey chunks and we're going to coat them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want, you could even do this in a bag. But you have to do it several times worth. It's kind of a lot of turkey to put in a bag like that. And if you put the flour in the bag, it gets damp. So I like to spread it out and then I can keep getting to dry spots. Does that make sense? Yeah. You see, remember that oil? Let's heat it right in the casserole dish that we're going to use to throw this whole thing in because we're going to stick it in the oven. Add the turkey. Oh, I don't know. We're going to drown it. We're going to cook it is what we're going to do. About 10 minutes, medium heat, turning occasionally. Yeah, right on the stovetop in the oil. Browned all over. Let's transfer it to a plate. Uh-huh. If you've used pre-cooked turkey, so to speak, you're now going to add the oil. But you know there's oil now in the bottom of the Dutch oven that you're going to use for casserole. So we're going to add the onion and the peppers. Stir them around. Oh, what does it take? 5 minutes. They get kind of soft and they smell really nice. Uh-huh. You've got some flour left over from when you dredged the turkey. Sprinkle it in. Stir it around. Because it'll give a little bit of thickening, yeah. If you're using pre-cooked, throw in a little flour to the sauce, to the onions and the pepper. Not too much. You kind of look at it. You used a lot of flour on the turkey, maybe a few tablespoons. Okay, sprinkling it, stir it. One other minute. Stir in the stock. Kind of gradually, otherwise you're going to get splashing. Kind of stir it in gradually. Stir, stir, stir. We're going to add the raisins. We're going to add the tomatoes. We're going to bring the whole thing to a boil. Mm-hmm. You know that turkey that we cooked? Put it in. And if we brown it on all sides, but it's not really cooked turkey, because it's not if you've taken raw and you've just browned it for 10 minutes all around, you need to cook this whole thing for about an hour because you need to cook the turkey through. You can't serve raw turkey, for heaven's sakes. If you've used pre-cooked turkey, well, everything else is cooked already, right? So less time, because we're just going to meld the flavors and make everything hot and delicious. But it's all pretty darn well cooked, right? Yeah. So you have to judge whatever it is that you're doing. Cooking the turkey may take 3/4 of an hour, in the maybe a little bit more, depending on your oven. So you don't need more time than that, but if you've pre-cooked it, you don't need as much time because it's cooked through. Yeah. Okay. That's it. We serve it. It's delicious. The sauce is really sweet and cinnamony and raisiny, and it goes with the turkey. Yeah? Delicious. You can put a little more turkey into it. People are saying that 4 pounds is kind of small. I've done more than that. I've done what I don't measure, in all truth and honesty. It must be closer to 5 pounds, anyhow, maybe 6. I like to have lots of meat and not so much juice, if you know what I mean. I like it to be full. Yeah. Yeah, I must confess that I do usually use this recipe with cooked turkey. Shh, don't tell anyone. Or cooked ham, but that makes it adventure. Uh-huh. So, that is our safe recipe. We do it with rice on the side. I like to put everything on the side so that people can take as much as they want, right? Or pasta. Yeah. I know George always goes for mashed potatoes. Yeah, that would be good too. Mm-hmm. And or some sort of like a couscous, some sort of a lovely starch on the side that goes either next to it or underneath it. Yay. So that is our safe recipe. Now, do you think we have time for the adventure recipe? We've got 2 minutes. Should I try talking fast? If I can or not. Oh, well, we'll give it a try. The adventure recipe is a chicken curry. In my neck of the woods, and I know this is a global show, a curry would be an adventure. Not everybody would have eaten one or be familiar with it. Curry may be the most ordinary, safest thing in the whole world for a safe recipe in your area because it's a global show. And I'm going to make the curry mild, because you can always add condiments to it. I'm in favor of mild first, right? Yeah. So we're going to have a nice chicken curry. We've got 2 tablespoons of what I'm going to say is mild curry powder, right? Not too much. A little bit of cumin, like a teaspoon. We need 3 tablespoons of butter. Yeah, not oil, butter. Let's have a nice big sweet onion that we're going to dice up. 3 garlic cloves that we're going to mince. You think I use too much garlic, use less. People say I use a lot of garlic. We're going to have 2 teaspoons of grated fresh ginger. Ooh, so delicious. 1 tablespoon of tomato paste. 8 boneless, skinless chicken breasts that we're going to cube. 1/2 cup of chicken broth. A nice big can of diced tomatoes. Strained. Yeah, one of those like 20-ounce cans. Let's have two cups of chickpeas, drained, right? You know chickpeas have that disgusting skin on them. So you not only have to wash, you rinse, not only drain them, you rinse them off and kind of rub them so that the skin comes off of anything that's going to have skin, right? So that the little skins don't float around in your food, which is, it's edible, but it's not pretty, okay? Let's have 1 cup of frozen green peas. We're going to thaw them. And 1/4 cup of heavy cream. Yes, don't use milk. Okay. We're going to get out our large skillet. We're going to toast the curry powder and the cumin for a second until it becomes nice and fragrant. If yours is really fresh, you don't have to do that, but around here it's dried. And we're going to set it aside, take it out. Now we're going to melt our butter, and we're going to add the onion until it's nice and golden, 6 minutes. Add the garlic and the ginger and the tomato paste. And our lovely toasted spices, stir to combine, right? Now we're going to add our cubed chicken, and we're going to coat it in the chicken, in the spice mixture, right? We're going to turn it all around. We're going to brown it. We've made cubes. It's white meat, so it's pretty cool. And we're going to run out of time. That's okay. We'll go over. And we're going to coat it with a spice mixture and brown it all around, right? We're going to add our chicken broth, our tomatoes, and we're going to bring the whole thing to a boil. Now, we're going to have to simmer this for about 10 minutes because we got raw chicken in there. Well, it's not really raw, so it'll take about 10 minutes. You need to be cooked through. We're going to add the chickpeas and the peas, the frozen peas, and the cream. We're going to stir it really nice, right, so that the cream doesn't get kind of curdly. And we're going to cook it for about 5 more minutes so everything is heated through and all incorporated. And that is the fastest chicken curry you can possibly make, and it is delicious. Yes. It is. You can even make it if you've got the facilities in the room because it smells so wonderful, and everybody's going to want some and come over because of the curry and the cumin and like that with the scent of the spices, yeah, and the ginger. Yum. Yes, I do indeed. People are asking me about the white raisins because I talked about white raisins in the first recipe. Yes, it is something that I put on the side as a condiment to curry all the time. That and mango chutney and coconut and slivered almonds. Yeah, because I think all those things go wonderful on curry. Yum, yum, yum. That is our adventure recipe because it's got curry. Yeah, and cumin, which is somewhat unusual around here too. Served with rice on the side. Yes, yes, some sort of nice rice, maybe a basmati or something like that. Yeah. We, my friends, are out of time. Now, we went a little bit over, but that's okay. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for contributing. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows are archived on that website. Thank you for being here. Thank you for participating. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.